and welcome to SSI Live. You've long known the Strategic Studies Institute, or SSI, at the U.S. Army War College as the go-to location for issues related to national security and military strategy, with an emphasis on geostrategic analysis. SSI conducts strategic research and analysis to support the U.S. Army War College curricula, assist and inform Army, DoD, and U.S. government leadership, and serve as a bridge to the wider strategic community. Now we're bringing you access to SSI analyses, scholars, and guests through this, the SSI Live podcast series. Thanks for joining us. Hello and welcome to this edition of SSI Live. My name is John Denny, and I'm a research professor of National Security Studies here at the Strategic Studies Institute at the U.S. Army War College. It's Thursday, February 15, 2024. And today I'm joined by my SSI colleague, Dr. Evan Ellis. Evan is a research professor of Latin American Studies, and I've asked him to join us today for a discussion on what we might expect in terms of a 2024 regional outlook. So, Evan, welcome.
Thanks, John. It's a pleasure to be with you on the program.
Evan, you've written that in 2024, Latin America and the Caribbean will be affected largely negatively by conflicts outside the region, as well as by increasingly confident and maybe aggressive posture of illiberal actors external to the region as well, pursuing agendas involving authoritarian and other partners within Latin America and the Caribbean. So let's unpack that by talking first about the largest external conflicts and the likely impacts on Latin America and the Caribbean. So I'm thinking specifically about the ongoing Russian war in Ukraine and the Israeli incursion into Gaza. So let's take each of those in turn. What's your sense of how the war in Ukraine first might affect or continue to affect Latin America and the Caribbean in this calendar year?
Well, John, of course, all of these issues show the substantial and increasing interdependence that Latin America has economically as well as politically and strategically with the rest of the world, and of course, the U.S. connection to that. But specifically with respect to Ukraine, there will be both positive and negative potential effects. On the positive side, Russia has been relatively limited in its ability to engage in Latin America, and that will probably continue with respect to the effects of sanctions and just Russia's lack of commercial resources for spending elsewhere. It will continue to have some limited engagement, for example, in terms of the agricultural industry where it engages with Brazil, among others, but greatly reduced. Now, it is possible, depending on how things go on the battlefield and how things go, frankly, in the U.S. Congress with funding, that in the event that Russia makes substantial gains and Vladimir Putin is emboldened, that emboldened posture could lead him to take advantage of different anti-U.S. actors such as the Maduro regime in Venezuela, the Ortegas in Nicaragua, and the Cuban regime to try to project threats in the U.S. backyard in greater ways than he has thus far. You also may see that if the war evolves, that there may be a resurgent wave of opportunism by specifically Lula da Silva in Brazil trying to promote his interest in making Brazil a global actor through trying to spearhead peace initiatives. And then finally, there will be some impacts on our partners specifically, especially with respect to their military readiness, given that many of the nations in the region have acquired over the years a not trivial number of Russian military helicopters and other items. And so our partners in Peru and Colombia and to a lesser extent Brazil and Mexico will face difficulties in maintaining, especially at the depot level, maintenance and thus operational readiness. And indeed, we've actually already seen relatively pro-U.S. governments in Ecuador and Argentina committing to give up a substantial number of their Russian equipment to allow us to provide those to Ukraine in exchange for the U.S. providing either military credits or other U.S. equipment in the future for those partners.
Well, Evan, let's turn now to the conflict in Gaza. How do you think Israel's incursion there could impact Latin America and the Caribbean this year?
Really, two areas, John. Number one, oil. Number two, the prospect for escalation. With respect of oil, of course, we've already seen how the sense of the need to keep oil flowing and keep oil prices reasonable has perhaps led the Biden administration to limit its response to the move away from commitment on democracy by the Maduro regime in Venezuela, and that may continue to impact that. With respect to the prospect of escalation, especially the degree to which there is a increased fighting or direct combat between the U.S. and Iran and not just Iran's proxies, that could have two potential impacts in Latin America. Number one, especially if, for example, the Straits of Hormuz or other areas are closed down, or if there's a more substantial disruption to the Suez Canal, as we see from the missile attacks by the Houthis, that could lead to not only higher oil prices, but also other global supply chain disruptions. And that would impact the economies of the region and indirectly the politics. And so the prospect of higher prices of people who depend on relatively inexpensive foodstuffs and cooking oil and affordable gasoline when they have to pay for their own transportation, that could impact, as we've seen after the 2022 invasion, that could impact countries such as Honduras, Colombia, Peru, and Chile through social protests, perhaps even have some impact in upcoming elections in economically sensitive areas such as Panama and the Dominican Republic, both of which have elections in May. It could have some impact on immigration in the region, especially given the vulnerability of the Caribbean and Central America to oil prices and food prices. But on the other hand, higher oil prices could give some help to authoritarian regimes in Venezuela, but also the beleaguered regime, pro-U.S. regime in Ecuador and the regime in Guyana. And then finally, with the escalation directly of an Iran-U.S. Conflict, there is the possibility that we could see some terrorism or Iranian aggressive moves in the region. Remembering that, of course, Hezbollah, Iran's proxy, has long operated in Latin America as a largely raising funds, but has engaged in terrorism on a small number of occasions, most notably in Argentina in 1992 and 1994. And thus, an escalation in the region could allow Hezbollah to try to attack either U.S. targets or regimes seen as pro-Israel, such as the Malay regime in Argentina. And also, given that Iran, as far back as 2020 with the Raisi regime, has been reactivating its capabilities in the region, mostly through Venezuela, but also through Nicaragua and Cuba, among others, we could see that, as with Russia, that if the U.S. Iran fight escalates in the Middle East, that could lead Iran to try to use anti-U.S. regimes in Latin America to, again, project some of those threats in the U.S. near abroad.
Evan, that's fascinating. I mean, we think of these conflicts as quite far from Latin America and the Caribbean, but clearly, as you've outlined for us, there are likely to be some implications in the region. But let's dive further into the region now, but talk about this in the context now of the extraterritorial actors that are most of concern, at least from the U.S. perspective. Let's start with China in broad terms. So from China's perspective, in terms of diplomacy, trade, investment, that kind of a thing, what are you looking out for this coming year as China continues its engagement across Latin America and the Caribbean?
Well, to begin with a broad brush with respect to China's engagement in Latin America, a number of different areas, as you mentioned. Number one, I do expect that we will see the continued expansion of PRC trade with the region, including actors where they've recently established relationships in especially Central America, especially Honduras and Nicaragua, among others. We will also, however, see changes in patterns of those trade. So it's possible that, especially with some of the economic disruptions and the softening of the Chinese economy, that some commodity prices, especially in metals, may be lower, and that will impact partners that have been relying on those exports, such as Peru, such as Chile. At the same time, with respect to Chinese investments in Latin America, again, the problems with the Chinese economy mean we'll probably see less policy bank finance. We'll probably see, as we've already seen, less big investment projects. However, in areas that are prioritized by by China, green energy, so hydro, wind, solar, transmission capabilities and distribution, also digital industries, especially telecommunications. It's likely you'll continue to see those important projects and important sectors accelerating. Also, expect to see a continuation of the new wave of Chinese diplomacy toward and in the region. So last year, we had at least eight Latin American leaders go to the PRC. This year, at least as signaled by Wang Yi, the Chinese foreign minister's, what appear to be preliminary visits to Brazil and Jamaica, and what's on the schedule for Peru to host the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum in Lima, it's likely that President Xi, perhaps in the second part of the year, could come to Brazil, possibly Jamaica, and almost certainly to Peru. And then finally, expect to see some increased pressure on flipping countries, especially in Central America and the Caribbean, that currently recognize Taiwan, trying to get them to change over. So to that aspect, some of the smaller Caribbean countries are vulnerable, and some reason to believe that perhaps Guatemala with the new Arevalo regime could be vulnerable as well.
You know, the economic headwinds that are confronting the Chinese government right now, it's interesting that it may, as you describe, make them more interested in engaging perhaps more aggressively in some ways economically across the region. But it certainly does not mean in any case that they're going to pull back from the region, as you made clear. Let's dive into some of the subregions now, starting with Central America. And if you could highlight for us maybe some of the highlights as we look at that region. You just mentioned Guatemala, for example. Are there other highlights in Central America, other countries you'd like to highlight in terms of how extraterritorial actors like China, but also Russia and Iran, how they might go about pursuing their interests in this subregion? And then what may be the implications for the U.S.?
Absolutely, John. Well, first of all, as you noted, Central America overall is impacted by a range of economic and political difficulties, and that will continue to be the case this year. At the same time, the PRC is in the process of really consolidating relatively new relationships with a number of actors, and we'll continue to see that playing out. So in the case of El Salvador, you have a number of projects, a library, a national stadium, a pending major port project that could go forward. But with respect to others, of course, you have a new PRC relationship with Nicaragua. There have been new commitments for the PRC-based companies to build an airport, La Jueta, as well as a number of potentially important road and rail projects, some of which may go forward. In Nicaragua, you could see, in as a relatively unique case, the possibility, as we've mentioned before, of some additional military commitments by Russia in Iran as a complement to China. Now, when we look at Honduras, the leftist regime of Xiomara Castro there is in the process of deepening her relationship with the PRC as well, which has not only economic components such as a new dam project and telecommunications connectivity, but also has a political component, a number of different people-to-people projects, as well as the possibility of security cooperation between Honduras and in the PRC with respect to police, as well as just low-grade military activities. It's also a possibility that Honduras, given its left orientation of the Liberty Party, could surprise us and reach out with some engagements to Russia and possibly even Iran. In addition to that, of course, one of the key items of interest for the PRC in Honduras is the Highway 5 corridor, which connects the Atlantic to the Pacific, largely built to this point by U.S. companies, and along which you find the proximity of the a major U.S. base and the joint the JTF Bravo forward operating location. And so the Chinese development of that corridor in terms of a logistics hub could raise some sensitivities for the United States, even potentially access to our full there. In addition, as I mentioned, some concern with respect to the Guatemalan government of Bernardo Arevalo, which, again, pro-U.S., but is continuing to struggle. Especially his Semilla party is dependent on a coalition of other parties in the Congress to get anything done. And it's that dependence that could lead not Semilla per se, but some of its parties that are affiliated with it to whisper in the ear to say, hey, we really should, for economic reasons, recognize the PRC if you want our cooperation on these other anti-corruption issues. And then, of course, finally, Panama, which has elections this May 5, which those elections are now wide open with the affirmation of the prison sentence against former President Martinelli, who used to be the front runner, and of course his current status taking refuge, asking for asylum within Nicaragua's embassy there in Panama City. But that really kind of throws open Panama itself to political change with respect to the other candidates. Although it's not clear whether some of the currently stalled or ambiguous projects in Panama with respect to China will go forward quickly. Certainly some problems in Panama with financing due to the drought that affects the canal operations, as well as the loss of Panama's major mining operation, First Quantum. So Panama will probably continue to breed uncertainty, but it may not lead dramatic results in terms of the advance of extra-hemispheric actors.
Evan, let's turn now to the Caribbean. What can you highlight there in terms of what you expect from extraterritorial actors in the region and what the implications might be for the U.S.?
In the Caribbean specifically, you have continuing pressure from insecurity and violence, the possibility of an oil shock if the situation in the Middle East escalates. The PRC has consolidated its position in a number of what I'd call enclaves, Grenada, Dominica, Jamaica, with the possibility of the Xi visit there, Antigua and Barbuda. There's a possibility of a flip by some of the smaller states, St. Vincent, St. Kitts, and St. Lucia. Dominican Republic has an election on May 19th. The biggest possibility of Russian or Cuban activities, Russian or Iranian activities, of course, would be in Cuba.
All right. Finally, Evan, let's turn our eyes southward. When we look at South America with regard to these activities of extraterritorial actors, what are the highlights you might look for in 2024? And again, what might be the impact for the U.S.?
Well, the biggest story could be Venezuela, which has been the hub for Russia and Iran, especially in the region, as well as Hezbollah. And so with the strengthening of the Maduro regime with the current U.S. sanctions policy, as well as the possibility of increased revenues from oil, we might see continued activity by those actors there, as well as, frankly, a return by the PRC to the oil sector there. PRC is likely to make some major advances across the board in Brazil in terms of energy sector, ports and manufacturing. Peru, the opening of the Chinese operated and owned Chiang Kai port will probably be a big story, as well as the APEC summit with President Xi possibly coming to Peru for that. In places like Bolivia and Chile, the development of lithium. And of course, in Argentina, with a relatively pro-U.S. government skeptical of China, the question of whether the Milei government there will relook at Argentina's commitments to space, as well as how Argentina will proceed forward with some of the other projects that China has in sectors like lithium, oil, agriculture, and infrastructure.
Evan, you've placed a lot on the table here for us to keep our eyes on in Latin America and the Caribbean. I think we're going to have you back on SSI Live later this year to maybe examine in further detail where and how some of these things you've warned us of maybe have come to fruition. Does that sound okay by you?
Absolutely. Always a pleasure to be on the show with you, John.
All right, Evan Ellis, Research Professor of Latin American Studies, thanks so much for joining me today.
You can now find SSI Live on TuneIn Radio and on popular podcast directories like Stitcher and at the iTunes Store. If you have any comments on our podcasts, thoughts on what you'd like to see addressed, or a response to something you heard here at SSI Live, please go to our website. That's ssi.armywarcollege.edu. Find me, John Denny, in the staff directory, and send me an email. I look forward to hearing from you. For the SSI Live podcast series, I'm John Denny. Thanks for listening.